Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Because we have to, and there's no choice because everyone's talking about it and we can't stop talking about it. We're diving back into the Karen Reed trial. And there's more drama in this, thicker than the Boston fog. Karen Reed's accused of running down her boyfriend, Boston cop John O'Keefe, with her SUV in a 2022 blizzard and leaving him to freeze. The prosecution's leaning hard onto Jennifer McCabe, who says Reed screamed, "I hit him, I hit him, I hit him," like she was auditioning for a true crime doc. Meanwhile, the defense is peddling a theory that O'Keefe was beaten up inside a house and framed, which sounds like it belongs in a conspiracy podcast, not a courtroom. It's a mess of a he said, she said, and here to cut through the noise, retired FBI Special Agent Robin Drake, whose behavioral analysis skills are going to come in handy here. Robin, McCabe's testimony, and we're going to watch some of it here in just a little bit. It seems to be the prosecution's golden ticket thus far, but the defense says she's less reliable than a tabloid. We'll watch some of the testimony in just a little bit. But overall, what have you been gleaning out of the testimony that we've seen thus far out of her?
You're seeing what we expect to see and what we've always seen. And that is, I think we're seeing someone under high stress with a lot on the line, with a lot of moving parts in her life. And I think it's congruent for the situation and stress she's under. And you really hit a key point, I think, which is going differently this time than last time, is that the defense is doubling down on these conspiracy theories with no supporting data.
Yeah.
I think it's fallen apart. I think the prosecution has mitigated to some extent the missteps they did on the investigation, and they're just sticking with the same story. And defense is really sticking with their same story of a fight and a dog attack and all that. And this just that just makes no sense whatsoever from the data we're seeing.
I put something out just the other day about what you would have to believe.
That's a good way to put it.
In order for the defense's theory to be accurate. And it's really when you put it out there like that, it's kind of like, oh God, that is true. And the thing is, you can believe that Karen Reed is innocent and factually innocent of this without believing all of that. All of that just seems to be a lot of fluff that I think is only going to hurt her more than actually help her. And there, you got the two camps where it seems they think that, you know, one has to be doing this in order for this to be true, or one has to be doing that for this to be. It doesn't. It can be completely none of the above. So to believe this, you're going to have to believe that the party full of cops, teachers, and suburban parents and kids turn into a homicide scene while people are checking Celtic scores, watching games, and also listening to It's Raining Men on a cell phone on a happy night that has been documented. At the bar, there was no fights. Everybody was getting along good. All of these people walked away from that night saying it was a good night. They even were texting each other about what a great night it was when they left the house. Some even complimenting of, you know, they think Karen's a really nice person when they saw her at the waterfall. Nothing like better shut up or like nudge, nudge, great night. We killed O'Keefe, you know, and it's cops. Cops don't take kindly to another cop being killed, even if he's like the worst cop on the force. Nobody's like, great, he's dead. And O'Keefe certainly was far from that. He was loved by all these people. So you have to believe that whole conjecture that all of these people on a dime somehow thought John O'Keefe is going to die. Or I know what could have been a fight somewhere. Well, then no one saw this. Nobody saw that he was being drug out to the yard by someone and he's dead. And we're just going to leave him out there when people are looking out the window and people are texting, John, where are you at? Oh, you know, one of your friends killed him. He's in the front yard. Everybody be quiet. We don't want to get him in trouble. A German shepherd named Chloe may or may not have been silently mauling a 6-foot-tall Boston cop. John O'Keefe was allegedly beaten inside the house with no blood, no cleanup, no noise, and no one noticing, and then dragged out to the front yard past ring cams and neighbors and putting him under a flagpole near the very front of the yard before the snow had completely come falling down. So if you were paying attention in that direction, you would see him. And then that Jennifer McCabe would have to be looking up how's long to die in cold, not because she panicked, but because that's what you do when you're cool with your friend dying in the front yard. And you also need to check basketball scores at the same time. And again, somehow every person involved, cops, spouses, teenagers, all keeping this secret private for 2 years. No one leaks, no stitches. And then they all went back inside and listened to It's Raining Men. That's how... You'd have to believe that theory to be real.
I mean, and think about how much easier I think it would be. Again, I'm not a defense attorney or prosecutor or anything, but just, you know, from a human standpoint of what we're witnessing, think about how much easier it would have been for the defense to say, everyone was drunk, we don't know what happened, but it wasn't her.
Yeah, say that.
Instead of coming up with some kooky theory that just doesn't hold any water, one from all the things that you pointed out, but then I just keep going back to data and laws of probability. It is usually our best indicator. There's been no history of violence of all any of these people amongst each other. And Jen McCabe herself, I think I'm learning more about why she is the linchpin here, because she was the one that is the great organizer. She's the one that's friends with everyone. She's the one that's the mother of four. She's like the and we see them throughout our lives. You know, she's the linchpin that kind of is the hub of the spoke of the wheel, keeping all things together. And as the type of person as we're seeing from her on the stand and all these other aspects of life, she's highly protective of her relationships, her people, her friends, her family. And there's no way I can imagine from the data that we've seen from these data points that she would allow something of potential violence into that house and into this circle. And so there's just nothing to support the in my mind, I hate using the word, the kooky theory of the defense, what they're using. It would have been so much easier to say, we don't know what happened. It wasn't us.
I agree. I think you could argue that you could. I mean, it's interesting what we're hearing right now of Jen McCabe even talking about when they were driving around the next morning with Karen trying to help her figure out where John was. McCabe even said, well, you know, I'm just paraphrasing, but, you know, he's got a buddy that basically lives across the street. Why don't we check over there and see if he's on the couch? Or, you know, or did he get in a fight with his friend across the street or something? Because clearly nothing happened at the house. Nobody has anything there other than the defense of Karen Reed made up a story and somehow it got admitted as a probable third-party culprit story, which I kind of baffled by in that. Let's watch some of the testimony from Jen McCabe, and we might have some Carrie in here too, because I think this is a very key point in this story and the timeline of how it was presented this round versus how it was presented in the past. And it kind of opened up my eyes a little bit more to it as well, because timeline is important. And when Karen Reed is saying, did I hit him? Could I have hit him? And if she said, I hit him. But the fact that she is freaking out at 5-something in the morning in front of John's niece, because she's still at the house, even though she texted John, I'm leaving your kids and blah, blah, blah. She's still there. She's not being the adult in the room. She's freaking out. The kid has to, like, give her the phone. The kid has to look up the numbers of McCabe and also Carrie to get contact with them, because Karen doesn't have it. And what's Karen freaking out about? Could I have hit him? Did
impact on her.
At that moment in time, before they even found John in the snow, or even anybody having an idea that he would be in the snow. Hours earlier, she was thinking he's sleeping with somebody else.
Her locus of attention is on her.
Let's take a look at this.
At 4:53, my phone rings, and I look at my caller ID. I look at the phone, and it's Kaylee, John's niece. John's niece. And I say hello, and she said, yeah, well, basically she relayed to me that,
Next question.
When you pick up the phone, could you hear a voice on the other end?
I heard a voice and a lot of screaming.
And the voice you heard, is that Kaylee, John's niece?
Yes.
And the screaming, was it a man or a woman screaming?
It was a woman.
How loud was that person screaming?
Very loud.
Could you make out anything that person was saying as they were screaming?
My name was screamed a lot. And then the other individual ended up getting on the phone with me.
And who was that person that was screaming in the background?
Miss Reed.
How long was she screaming for while you were speaking to your niece before you spoke to her?
The entire time I was speaking to Kaylee, she was screaming.
Describe her demeanor.
Miss Reed's?
Yes.
Jen! Jen! And then she's screaming that John didn't come home. She left him at the waterfall. She was hysterical. It was very hard to follow what she was saying.
How long did that first call last for?
I'm not sure how long, maybe possibly a few minutes, but it was loud enough and long enough that my husband shot up in bed thinking one of my kids had come in the room screaming.
There was two calls made around the same time, one to Jen McCabe and one to Carrie Roberts. Let's watch the Carrie one as well for context.
When she first called, she said, John's dead, Carrie, and hung up.
And she called you back?
She called back.
When she called back, was there any other party on the line other than you and her?
No.
What do you remember the second time that she called you?
Yes. She said, John, I think he got hit by a plow. He did not come home last night. He would never not have come home. I wasn't supposed to stay in Canton. And Kaylee was here. He would never leave Kaylee by herself.
Did anybody ever ask you to lie?
No.
Or exaggerate?
No.
Would you?
Say that?
Would you?
No.
Sustained.
You were asked whether or not you told people on January 29th about the missing pieces to the defendant's taillight. And you began to say you didn't tell anybody that morning.
I didn't think it had anything to do with John. I didn't want to point fingers at anybody.
Why not?
Because I had no idea what had happened to him. I wasn't going to point fingers at his girlfriend.
Was it, in fact, broken with missing pieces that morning?
Yes.
All right. Robin Drake former chief of the FBI's Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. I have two behaviors I want to get your opinion on. Are these credible witnesses? Do they seem like people who are lying and making up a story for a conspiracy? One, and then two, Karen's behavior, saying, I hit him. Could I have hit him? All this on the phone before they even know he's in the yard. Thoughts?
Yeah, they seem credible to me. I mean, it's congruent with, so their behavior seems just baseline congruent. I mean, you're seeing some stress behaviors because they're on stands under questioning, mm-hmm. but it seems plausible. They're congruent. They're congruent with everything we're hearing. Tempo is consistent. So everything looked fine to me. When it came to Karen, the first thing that struck me was at that hour in the morning, she's still under the influence of alcohol mm-hmm. as well. And so we have that, which keeps causing crazy brain. Plus, as we've seen with every other behavior with her in, I think, remember last episode we covered, only 5% of the time is she outwardly focused on the well-being of others.
Yeah.
95% on her and things that impact her. So all the screaming, everything that's going on, you have alcohol-induced self focus on survival is what mm-hmm. I'm seeing.
Survival, and is there self-preservation here yet? I don't know. That's what I'm wondering.
I think she's trying to, in a fog of chaos, trying to piece together a narrative on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm seeing.
What do you make of the fact that she seems to have something that is driving her to say that she's concerned that he's outside, that he got hit by a snowplow there, that he's dead, which she said to Carrie. Could I have hit him? Did I hit him? Which she then continues to say until they actually find the body, and then continues with that after they find the body. But they're driving around town in a snowstorm. These girls come and try to pick her up, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And she's on this direction of I hit him. Could I have hit him? Mm-hmm. before they found the body. Why there? Why is she going there even? Because if you're out and everybody's drinking and having a good time, and if you saw him go into the house, which she claims that she did, although just minutes before at this moment in time, she says she doesn't remember dropping him off and that they left each other at the waterfall. And then suddenly she's met with, no, I saw your car outside my house last night, Karen. That doesn't make any sense. Then she has to grapple with that. And she's going back to, I have hit him. Not he's sleeping with another woman, which she was doing the night before, because that mm-hmm. could be plausible. Not I think for the character of John O'Keefe, but in her messed up, whatever is going on in her mind, paranoid mind, that seems like a plausible idea to her, that he could just be passed out on someone's couch if he went into the house that night and they all been drinking. Maybe John just crashed there. Those seem like very plausible ideas. He's not answering his phone. It's 5 a.m. Everyone was drunk last night. Nobody's answering their phone right now for the most part. Mm-hmm. Those all seem like very plausible things to be thinking. Not screaming in front of John's niece, I killed him. Why is she going there? If she saw him go into the house and she has no recollection of anything happening with John, dangerous, outside on the street.
Well, for one thing, she thinks externally, so she doesn't think internally. Sure. So she's vocalizing everything she's thinking out loud, and she's literally trying to piece together fragmented memories that she has. She's trying to take in data from other people to kind of build what the truth was of what happened. And I don't think there's any ulterior motive what she's doing in this moment. I think she's literally trying to figure out mm-hmm. in her drunken state the night before and everyone else's what the hell happened. Yeah. And she's doing so as an external thinker, meaning that she does not think internally or quietly. She just has no filter in how it comes. And so that's what everyone else around her is picking up on and also commenting on.
Yeah. And then again, as we analyze this down and look at all the data points of, what does make sense here? What does make sense here? You then have to add in that if this conspiracy, if he was beat up and killed in that house, drug out to the front lawn, somehow no one noticed any of this happening, that the relationships that existed there suddenly changed, and that Jen McCabe and Carrie Roberts suddenly became homicidal maniacs, and also then at the same point, a couple hours later, decided to go and assist Karen, but it's all a ruse to try and find John O'Keefe. So they would be in that car, and they just witness somebody die, whether it's their fault or somebody else's fault, but they would have known it happened. And they're looking up, or she's looking up basketball scores, also while trying to figure out how long John's going to take to peter out in the cold in the front yard. And then just as plain as day, yeah, let's go help her. Let's help her search. Let's go and help. Let's look. But that's all a ruse. You'd have to believe that too.
Well, the interesting thing too, to consider in all this is when we are under stress as human beings, our emotional impulses, our less thinking brain engages. In other words, who we are at our core is what comes out. And so in Jen McCabe's case and all these other people's cases, where do you see their concern? Their concern is not the impact on them. Their concern is others, concerned for Karen, concerned for everyone else but themselves. And so Karen's concern is where? Self. So under stress and emotional hijacking, we see the true behavior and focus where people come out. And I think that's what we're seeing in the first morning after, as the effects of the alcohol from the night before are starting to wear off, and stress hits of chaos, we're seeing the focus.
I think that's a very good way of putting what we're witnessing here. Let's take another look at another clip. This is, again, this is another initial one where Karen's memory is not the greatest, and how her story kind of continually adjusts as more facts are put in front of her. And I'm not saying this is nefarious. This is just kind of how the human brain seems to work.
Yes.
When you kind of are browned out, like, oh yeah, there is that there. So that would make that impossible. Maybe I do have a little bit of a memory of something, of being at that house. Let's take a look.
And then when she got on the phone, I had told her, Karen, I saw you guys outside of my sister's house. And then she told me she didn't remember being there. And then she went on to say, she started saying, could I have hit him? Did I hit him? I don't. And then she just was just all over the place, like screaming my name, screaming so many different things. She was hard to follow or understand.
When she was saying to you, did I hit him? Could have I hit him? Was that before or after you informed her that you had seen her out front of your sister's house?
It was after I told her that. She also informed me that she had cracked her taillight.
In that conversation, she told you that?
In one of the conversations I had with her in my bedroom, yes.
When you told her that you had seen her out front, and she had said that she didn't remember that night, was that before or after she was saying, did I hit him? Could have I hit him?
Can you repeat the question? Sorry.
She was telling you about that she didn't remember that night.
Mm-hmm.
Was that before or after you had told her about seeing her car?
When I said I saw you, her at Fairview, then her response was she didn't even remember going there.
Did she ever deny that she came to Mr. O'Keefe's house? I mean, to your sister's house?
No.
When she told you or said to you, did I hit him or could have I hit him or something like that, did you have any idea what she was talking about?
No, I didn't pay attention to it.
When she told you that she had cracked her taillight the night before, did that have any significance at that time to you?
No.
Another, I think he put it in good perspective of, did it have any significance about the taillight at that moment in time? Because Jen and Carrie are not that concerned about the taillight. They're not putting it together. They're not going, you killed him, you hit him. Right. Which I would think, honestly, if you're trying to play the conspiracy card and you are responsible and everybody at the fun party is responsible for killing John, and Karen's like raising her hand going, I think I might have done it. I think you'd lean into that if you're like, oh my God, Karen, you must have done it. If you're trying to frame Karen Reed, but they're not. They're just like, don't worry about that, Karen. That is even a time where Carrie even, or Jen, Carrie says, no, you didn't hit John. Like, let's go, because it doesn't seem logical to anyone at that moment in time that would have even taken place.
Right. Because it just doesn't make sense that she would hit him and run off either.
No.
But what we keep seeing Karen doing is she's trying to ascertain what everyone else's recollection was, what everyone else's story is, so she can start in her defensive mind for self-preservation. She's trying to take the narrative that everyone has and starting to craft it to support her and to defend her. So she's floating ideas, she's floating concepts, she's floating theories, she's floating memories to kind of test and see where everyone else is at, to kind of piece it all together to for preservation. Again, this isn't a conscious act that people do. It's just a natural state of being when we get in a kind of emotional hijacking space.
Yeah, yeah. Again, let's go back one more time to the idea that she kept going back to that space of he's in the yard. They get there. She makes a beeline for the spot where John is at. Nobody can see anything because there's enough snow on the ground. John is covered, despite what people will say, like, oh, there's no. It was by that time, there's a thick amount of snow on the ground. Nobody's seeing John O'Keefe on the ground. They have to get the snow off of him to actually physically see him. So the fact that Karen made a beeline right to him in front of the flagpole rather than going to the front door of the house, which is where one would logically think John is, on a couch, or where did you guys see him last since you saw him go in there? She somehow instinctively thinks he's in the front yard and goes directly to him in the front yard before trying anything else.
Does not want to believe the truth of what transpired. So, that's all it is. So, I mean, she's just taking in data points to not believe the truth of what happened.
Do you think she has a memory of him getting hit or being injured in that yard? Or is it, because I think it could be this other thing too, where she backs up, I've said this before, looks out the window, shouts something, or doesn't even, that might not even have occurred, not even the shouting, just looks back. Where's John? I didn't even see him get in the house. That was quick. And just like, ah, fuck it. And then just leaves. You know, just kind of in that drunken, he must have got in. And you're just not worried about it. But then in the fog of everything in the morning where John's not back and you're wondering back, well, that's weird. I didn't see him get in the house either. Oh, I got a cracked taillight. Oh, shit. So, did I hit him? Or is it that consciousness of like putting those pieces together? Or is there a world where Karen maybe saw him out of the side of the road, which then you get to the second degree murder.
So remember, she made the phone call to him or text. No, she called him, remember, saying all pissed.
Yeah, all
really
that.
Pissed, yep. That he went in and you're there for 2 minutes. Where the hell are you?
Yeah.
So she is a drunken, angry woman at this point.
Yeah.
And so when you are drunk and angry and you back into something, you're going to rationalize away, well, screw him, you know, again, pure conjecture and everything. But again, you can, it's an easier path to go down to understand a drunken, angry woman, under the influence driving off after backing into something and saying, well, piss off. Mm-hmm. And then in the light of the morning, as many people have done, saying, oh, what did I do last night?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe there's a little more to that than I gave the moment for, because I was in a drunken idiot stupor.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes me wonder.
I mean, just think about the data points on that are so much more plausible than the conspiracy theory that completely. He was beat up inside the house, dragged outside, the dog bit him, you know, aliens and Martians came down. I mean, just.
Mm-hmm. And I find it very plausible, whether she hit him or not. And could she, factually innocent is different than innocent. Factually innocent means you don't have the facts to prove that she actually hit him. So then you can't convict. There's reasonable doubt there. If she is innocent, it means she just didn't hit him. Right. I think it could go either way there, quite honestly. And then to get to second degree, you'd have to show that she has some consciousness of it, which does show that she has some consciousness of it by her actions. But is that nefarious? Is that intent? Is that just putting the pieces together? I don't know that we're ever going to have a true answer to that question. But then that can be believed independently of the house beat you up situation. It's such a twisted world in all of this that I don't know where this is going to go. I think the situation and the crazy story is going to sink Karen far worse than if they would have just gone with, we don't know what happened.
I know, because, I mean, you're right. To know her conscious thought at the moment when she's drunk and backs into something and hits something, whether she knew it was him or not, I don't even, you know, it's hard to think that even she would know in that moment. I mean, her BAC was so stinking high, I can't even believe she was able to even operate that car.
Yeah.
Certainly wasn't legal, not even close to being legal.
Not at that time. No. She was blown over at high in the morning. So.
I know. I can't believe she actually got up that early and was awake that early.
Yeah.
And she was able to roust other people as well. So that's why there was something off. And so it's why I'm with you. If they had just stuck with, and so I understand it too. I mean, there's so many, these relationships are so complex that they had here. Mm-hmm. They were all on her side at the beginning too. Cause remember, I think I heard, Jen McCabe even say, we all thought Karen was just kind of, you know, once the kind of the light of day happened, they just kind of own up to the fact it was a horrible, tragic accident.
Yeah.
And they were shocked when she didn't.
Yeah.
And then they all went down the crazy hole.
A lot more to come in the trial of Karen Reed.
Want true crime coverage all day, every day? Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.